Martha Plimpton, and you're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show. The writer David Rakoff died last August at the age of 47 after a long bout with cancer. He was the author of the bestsellers Fraud, Don't Get Too Comfortable, and Half Empty, all books of essays. But he was working through his last months on a novel called Love, Dishonor, Marry, Die, Cherish, Perish, written entirely in verse. It'll be published next week by Doubleday, and joining us to talk about it is Ira Glass, executive producer and host of This American Life, which David Rakoff frequently contributed to, and who recorded the audiobook with David just weeks before he passed. Hello, Ira.
Hey there, Martha.
I'm happy to have you on. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on. And you knew David as well.
I did. We were good friends, but I feel that was just David's nature was to make everyone he met feel like the most important person in the world to him. And I feel, I don't know, very honored that that I did know him.
Though to go over the amount of saccharin in the atmosphere,
yeah.
I will say that one of the things about him that was so strange was that he had all of these friends and none of us knew about each other. Mostly, I feel like after he died, all these people were just like, "Oh, you were close to him too," and he would never mix groups.
I know. He only mixed groups with me a couple of times, but I think it's because he liked to have us all to himself.
Well,
he might have been
just
a little bit selfish that way, our David.
Yeah, also, I think he was awkward in large social groups.
Yes.
Weirdly, for somebody who did. Yeah. But there's I just feel like he liked keeping people's secret from each other out of some deep-seated thing from childhood where he felt like he had to compartmentalize.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe this is more psychological than listeners need to know. But anyway, like it was so weird. Like
yeah.
after he died, meeting all these people, it's like, oh, you knew David.
I know. It's funny. We had so many mutual friends that we discussed even before, you know. We'd have dinners at his home and realize, oh, my goodness, we've got all these crazy connections.
Yeah.
So, David, let's talk a little bit about David's writing. David Rakoff is best known for his essays, of course. He won the Thurber Prize for American Humor for his essay collection, Half Empty,
yes.
In 2010. But did he write fiction often or only essays?
I mean, he wrote fiction occasionally. Like, he wrote a screenplay for a short film that won the film won an Academy
That's
Award.
That's right,
the
New Tenants, yeah.
And you know, he was an actor, you know, mm-hmm. I think had written things now and then. And then for the radio, he would write these pieces in rhymed couplets.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the pieces that had been on the radio were converted into sections of the book. There's the scene that happens at a Christmas party, and there's a wedding toast that mm-hmm. both had been on the radio that he wrote for us. And mm-hmm. and I wasn't so aware. I mean, if you mention it, I don't think I focused on it very well, that he was thinking someday of writing a whole book in rhymed couplets, which is what the new book is.
Do you know where the idea came from, how he came to decide to write an entire book that way?
I don't. I think it came easily to him and it was fun to him. I know as a fact it did. And he always enjoyed himself way more writing these kinds of things than writing essays.
How did you react when you first read or heard these stories written in verse? What were your thoughts?
Well, the ones
about?
For radio are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they really are just beautiful stories. The sections of the book that he first did for radio, and so mm-hmm. I was just excited to get him on the show. Like, I don't think I had a smarter thought than that. And then, David would hate it that I'm saying this, but years before, David Sedaris had written a play for us in rhymed couplets.
Oh.
David Rakoff felt, you know, like would hate to be like standing in Sedaris' shadow. And he would hate the fact that I'm even bringing this up here. But Rakoff was in that radio play that we did. And in fact, sort of steals the show. And he's on with like great actors too, with Amy Sedaris and
right.
Jackie Hoffman and all. And he really does kind of steal the performance. He plays a cat. And I've always wondered if seeing Sedaris pull off a whole little story, drama story in rhymed couplets, kind of put the bug in him. I could do that.
Right.
But it was a decade before he turned to it. So I don't know. Maybe that has nothing to do with it.
Did you think it took him that long to work on it? Did he start working on it then, do you suppose?
No. I think he kind of like, you know, I think that when he first pitched us the first, I think The Wedding Story was the first of the two. I think he just had an idea, like, I think I can make this work, and mm-hmm. and knew he could.
So can you tell us a little bit about what the book is about, what the story is that he's telling? It's sort of about how lives intersect, and it spans many, many generations, many years.
Yeah, it's a funny little book because it's not very long. Mm-hmm. I remember when he sent it around to friends as soon as he finished, he said, like, right. Mercifully, it's a fifth of the size of a normal book.
So, right. So I remember,
I'm not
yeah.
burdening you. Yeah. But it has an epic sort of sweep where it mm-hmm. goes back 100 years and you have characters, you know, growing up and getting married and dying. And it starts, it's just a set of little interlocking vignettes mm-hmm. and some of the characters interlock in various ways. And truthfully, like, it starts, I think, with the weakest material in the book. It starts with a vignette in Chicago in the slaughterhouses.
Right.
That's good, but a little melodramatic compared mm-hmm. to what follows, which is very emotional, in a way that the first, you know, six or seven pages aren't as emotional as what follows. And
yeah.
then it's just a bunch of, like, alternately, like, funny and very sad stories, and stories where people are sort of mean to each other and cruel, and stories where there are little moments of kindness. And I think that people who like his essays will definitely see the same character and the same things that make his essays so strong in this.
I'm Martha Plimpton in today for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with This American Life's Ira Glass about our mutual friend David Rakoff and his last work, Love, Dishonor, Marry, Die, Cherish, Perish.
Oh, listen to you doing the radio business of moving along
the hour. I know. Can you believe it? I can't believe I'm doing this.
Well, good for you.
I know. It's hilarious, actually. How do you think am I doing okay, Ira?
That was
you
good. It was a little stiff. Just to criticize the laundry. It was a little stiff. You're supposed to pretend that you're not reading. I could tell you were reading that.
So you worked with David on the audiobook, which he read. And he's, of course, a wonderful reader and a brilliant actor. And didn't you record it just in the weeks before he passed?
Yeah. We recorded over the course of a week, and the last studio session was, I want to say 9 days or 10 days before he died. And we recorded quickly. Like, there's a point where we're just like, oh, should we wait till next week? And he wasn't sure if he was going to be strong enough to leave his house.
Yeah.
The following week, so we recorded the last session on a Saturday, and in last July, almost a year ago mm-hmm. now. And really, I think he only left his apartment once or twice after that, maybe just once, to go to the doctor. And you know, he was very weak. And mm-hmm. And there were lots of breaks during the reading where he would just kind of sit there and catch his breath.
And what was that like for you working with him on that last project?
I mean, there were two phases of it. One is the part where we were sitting in the room together, and that was both... I mean, that was the utterly familiar thing of working together in the studio and, you know, like, tweaking the performance. And, oh, you did that line a little fast, just do it again a little slower, like, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that thing that happens when you're close with somebody... I mean, I think most adults have gone through this, where you're close with somebody who's very, very sick and dying. And, you know, you have moments that seem utterly normal, and then one or the other or both of you... remembers all of a sudden, oh, right, like, look what's happening to you. And then, you know, you realize it all over again. And then in the case of the book, there are a few sections of the book where that really was very present in the mm-hmm. room, where one of the characters in the book is dying of AIDS. David was dying of cancer. But through him, through this character, Cliff, David got to write about, like, what it's like to know that you have a few months left to live. And there's two passages in the book, like, one where he writes about that and one where that character dies, that mm-hmm. you can feel David. I mean, I know that David was describing exactly what he was going through when he wrote it.
Well, let's listen to that clip. This is David Rakoff reading from his book. When you listen, you can hear that he is quite weak, but his artistry really comes through. Here's an excerpt of David Rakoff reading from his book.
It was sadness that gripped him far more than the fear that if facing the truth, he had maybe a year. When poetic phrases like, eyes look your last, become true, all you want is to stay, to hold fast. A new fierce attachment to all of this world now pierced him. It stabbed like a deity hurled lightning bolt lancing him, sent from above, left him giddy and tearful. It felt like young love. He'd thought of himself as uniquely proficient at seeing, but now that sense felt insufficient. He wanted to grab, to possess, to devour, to eat with his eyes. How he needed that power. Just like a child whose big gun is a stick. Cliff was now harmless. He'd gotten too sick to take any action beyond rudimentary routines that had shrunk to the most elementary. Which pill to take now, and where is your sweater? Did the Imodium make you feel better? Study your shit to make sure you'd not bled. Make sure the Kleenex is next to the bed. Make sure, be prepared. Plan out every endeavor. Like a scout on the stupidest camping trip ever. The facts were now harder. Reality colder. His parasol no match for this falling boulder. And so the concern with the trivial issues, slippers nearby, and the proximate tissues. He thought of those two things in life that don't vary, well, thought only glancingly, more was too scary. Inevitable, why even bother to test it? He'd paid all his taxes, so that left. You guessed it.
Well, it's very beautiful writing. It's extraordinarily beautiful writing. And, of course, the way David reads it, he was always the best at reading his own work. He was an extraordinarily gifted actor. He was also sort of an erstwhile dancer. Can you talk about his last performance last May at the live This American Life show? I know I've seen it, and it's really, really stunning.
Yeah, if people want to see this, they can just kind of Google David's name, and there's a video of it up online, I mean, it's funny that like that passage David wrote. There's the part where he talks about wanting to eat with your eyes. He wrote that in March when he and I and my wife Anahid, we went to see this dance company called Monica Bill Barnes and Company, and he really, really loved them, and David had danced. As a kid and in college and after college, he has said since that like part of he wasn't that great, he says, but in those pre-internet days where you couldn't get porn, it was a way that he could go into the locker room and look at a lot of really, really beautiful men. But in addition, he did dance and was a very graceful dancer and anyway, so we went and saw Monica and Monica Bill Barnes Company, and David really loved it and wrote that passage about wanting to like eat with your eyes, and then and then I had taken him there because I was trying to hook the two of them up to get her to choreograph something for David for our main show, and so David wrote a piece about what he was going through and losing your physical abilities. You know, as you get sick, or really as you get older, even, you know, he wrote about that as well, and how he had danced, and at that point in his life, he had had surgeries on his arm, on his lymph nodes, so his left arm was inert, like it wouldn't function at all, and he wrote about that, and he wrote sort of wistfully about what it was like to dance, but he knows he can't do it again, and then in the performance, he sort of stops talking, and then breaks into this dance that Monica choreographed.
It really has to be seen. It's just a beautiful. It's just an extraordinary performance and a real one of the most exposing performances I feel like I've ever seen someone do. What are some of the things that made him – he was such a gifted performer. What are some of the things
that – I mean, it's funny. Monica wasn't so into the idea of choreographing for him. And then she saw him – well, she's just like, what would this be? She couldn't imagine what it would be. And then partly it was my own fault because I had ideas about what it would be that were stupid. But then she saw him perform. And she saw him just read. And she said he had such a clear sense of how to hold a moment on stage, even just in doing a reading, like how to pause and hold a moment and how to just to like – like hold the air somehow, that she thought that he would be able to do it in dance. And then when they started working together, he still knew how to like carry himself and all. I mean, he was in a certain amount of physical pain, truthfully. Mm. Like his back was sore a lot. I'm sorry, am I answering the question?
I think you are. I mean, it's some people just have that natural storytelling ability, whether it's through words, language, sounds,
yeah,
like music,
like,
or their physical body.
He was just very awake to how to present himself, and in life as well, but certainly on stage. I remember the first time we had him read for we would do our shows sometimes in front of a live audience, and we would include him because he's such a good live performer. And I remember watching him perform a piece, and I was just noticing how quietly he was talking, and he was just killing. Like, and I was just like, what is he doing? It just looks all so tossed off, and he's talking so quietly.
Right.
And like, how is he even doing this?
It's funny because it's almost the same with his writing. You know, he had often said how difficult, the writing process was for him. I mean, it is for a lot of people, I suppose. But he was so talented. And he said, how much of a struggle it was and how much he used to procrastinate and put it off. And did he ever talk to you about his writing process?
Yes, of course, because I was his editor on many things. And there were many assignments where he would declare, like, no, this one will never work. I would never be able to do this. And we just go, well, just try to write this third paragraph. And then he'd get into it and it would be fine. I mean, he said, I know the FCC laws quite well, so we can air this sentence.
Okay.
That I'm about to say. No, he sort of said kind of famously, like that writing for him was like pulling teeth from his dick.
Right. It's a very famous line. That one goes down in the annals of great lines of all time. Yeah. But see, that's the thing. He was so terribly funny. And yet it came from this very kind of melancholic, some people would call it pessimistic, but I don't call it. I don't think he was a pessimist. I think he was.
Well, he did write a book called Half Empty.
But I don't think it. To me, it's a healthy pessimism. It's a sane kind of pessimism.
Yeah.
He was just, it's hard for me to describe, but he just was a unique guy. Can you talk about his style, his writing style, and what made it so very singular?
I mean, I think a lot of it is exactly the thing you're saying, that there's melancholy at the same time as it's very, very funny. Mm-hmm. And then truthfully, like for somebody who in person was not very show-offy, in fact, it's sort of to a fault in the other direction, in his writing, like he will have completely show-offy passages, like, just where he'll just run circles around people and mock people and use, huge words that no one uses in normal language. Even in the little thing that we just played as that clip, the fact that he uses the word proximate to talk about the tissues the something and the proximate tissues. I was like, who uses the word proximate to mean nearby?
Tissues nearby. And especially tissues, really.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
He just had a way with words, I guess, and beyond. I mean,
yeah, well said.
A way with words that I clearly do not have. But this is one of the things.
Me or anyone.
He also used the word carapace in a couple of different pieces.
He uses carapace. There's words in there that, like, honestly, I there are words in conversation with him, that would just pop out of his mouth in conversation. I would just think, like, quietly, look that up later.
But there's something to, I know, there's something, and he also had excellent manners, but his manners could also be, cutting, what I mean? He was almost like a Southern grand dame in that way.
I would recommend anybody who's curious. There's a really wonderful passage. If you Google David's name and Karl Lagerfeld, you'll get a really
That's really good. So there was this awesome, wonderful, beautiful piece in the New York Times last Sunday that Joel Lovell wrote, and he wrote something that really knocked me. I thought it was really true. He said that to be David's friend meant to reckon with what felt like an imbalance in kindness. And it occurred to me that really sort of summed up for me. It was always so difficult to give back all that you felt David was giving you, whether it was in his homemade crafts, you know, his duct tape
he would make wallets and posters for people,
right?
And really beautiful sort of boxes and things that he would hand make and hand paint. Yes,
right.
Yes, and he would give you cookies, and you'd go over to his house.
Little handmade boxes and things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I feel like, I don't know, I don't want to get overly sentimental about that.
Right.
I feel like there's also something sort of neurotic about that, like, to be frank.
His craft area was certainly neurotic. It was the most organized thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, it was beautiful, yes. But, no, I mean, just, you know, I mean, I feel like there's a tendency after someone's dead to, like, you know, just say the most wonderful things.
I don't have that problem.
I feel all of those things, but I also feel like there was also a quality to that of somebody taking control of a situation.
Right.
And he's the one giving the present and you aren't. Right. And I don't know. There's just something, like, not in a mean way, but just controlling what he exposes of himself. He would ask a lot of questions about you,
mm-hmm.
and would also talk about himself. But I know from his friends that many people had the feeling of, like, he would say less about himself, especially on things that he just didn't want to talk about.
Well, I can definitely say that in the world we live in now, there are moments when I find the people who are willing to ask about you instead of talk about themselves so few and far between that,
yes,
I found David's company in that regard, even though I understand exactly what you mean and I do not want to over-sentimentalize him because he would hate that. I also do so appreciate his curiosity about the world and people as well,
yeah,
so much. Thank you so much.
I agree with what you're saying. Sure.
Thank you so much for talking with us today, Ira, and being on the show.
All right. Well, lovely being here with you on the radio.
I've been speaking with Ira Glass, radio professional, host of This American Life, which you can hear on WNYC. Ira Glass and others, including myself, will be reading from David Rakoff's Love, Dishonor, Marry, Die, Cherish, Perish on Wednesday, July 17th at 7 p.m. at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. There's more information on our show page at WNYC.org. Ira, it's been great, and I'll see you on the 17th.
Great. See you on the 17th.
Thanks, Ira. Up next, Uzoa Makamaduka discusses founding The American Reader, a new literary journal, and how she hatched the idea for the project on a fire escape in Washington Heights. I'm Martha Plimpton, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.